It's so simple. Look, if you listen, you see, you live in a world where there's only sound for a moment. You'll hear every sound coming out of silence. Where do these sounds come from? Now, they come out of silence. Suddenly, boing. And you can accustom yourself to seeing light doing the same thing. You can open your eyes and see all this world emerging out of nothing. Boing, like that. And fading off into the past. So that's what the future is unknown, because the future is zero. And everybody who tries to know it, and that's the whole endeavor of, you see, trying to be God. You don't need to try to be God. You are. But if you try to be God, it means you don't know you are. And therefore you try to know and dominate the future. And you believe prophets and things like that. Well, prophecy is simply contaminating the future with the past. Projecting what we know upon the unknown. And that's why, really, things like astrology, although interesting, are rather ridiculous. Because if you know the future, there's no surprise for you. A completely known future is past. You've had it. Yes.
Where the future and the past come together, it seems to be there isn't anything there. There is no now, really. It may seem very philosophical, but it seems like we don't exist. How could we exist? There's no now to exist in. The past and the future come right together. Where is that place in between? How long is it?
There are two answers to that question. This is a real fun question. I love it. The question is about now. He's saying, really, there is no now. There is the future and the past come together, and the future turns into the past, and it goes, blip, and it's gone like that. So, you know, in no time at all, the future has become past. And so we get this frantic feeling. Where did it go? Well, let's take the small view, first of all. The now is infinitely short, and yet it's the only thing that is. In that case, this whole world is an illusion. It doesn't really exist. So, when the king, the Emperor Akbar, once was feeling a little sorry for himself and asked his jeweler, he said, make me a ring that will restrain me in prosperity and support me in adversity. And so the jeweler made him a ring and gave it to the emperor, and he saw written on it, it will pass. Now the other side of the matter is this, that this short now is an illusion of the clock. We make our second marks on clocks as thin as is consistent with visibility. And therefore we always think of the present as crossing the hairline. Tick! That's too long, see? How short can you get? See? But really, the present isn't like that at all. I mean, everything is like... There is nowhere else but now. Everything that happens is happening now. Well, it's like your field of vision. Your field of vision isn't just a point of light. Your field of vision is an oval. And it isn't fuzzy at the edges. It just ceases to be at the edges. But there's plenty of room in it to see something move across. So in your field of time, your now, there is enough now to include a phrase of music. If there weren't, you wouldn't be able to make out melodies, because there'd just be instantaneous notes with no connection between them. You would never hear intervals. So now is a big slobby thing. But it comes out of nothing. Yes. Lady is standing by the pillar. So the question is there then no need for man to seek for a meaning in his life? Not only his life, but the life of the universe. Right. No, there is no need to seek for a meaning. Meaning, I use the word in rather a definite way. And for me, meaning is a function of signs, particularly of words and symbols. Meaning is the referent of words, as when we take the word water, the meaning of it is something drinkable, whereas the sound water is not drinkable. So therefore, if we ask life to have a meaning, we look for something other than life to be that meaning. And therefore, we reduce life to being mere words and mere symbol. Now, of course, you may use the word meaning in a less precise way and say, now, although the music of Bach has no meaning in the sense that it is not like the music of Tchaikovsky, designed to imitate natural events and noises, nevertheless, it has meaning in the sense that it enchants us. The patterns of it ravish us in the same way as abstract patterns in an arabesque. That's a little different sense of the word meaning. And yes, I would say that life has that kind of meaning, but you don't seek it. Because if you seek it, you lose it. I see the process of life as an essentially musical process, which has no meaning except itself. It is going round in circles, like we love to spin in circles when we are dancing. Like children love to spin around in circles till they get dizzy. That's fun. And so the articulation of wonderful patterns is the meaning of life. If you seek for meaning, now this applies to all seekers, I'm sorry, growth seekers, but seeking's all right. I mean, it's a free country. But it invariably takes you away from what you're looking for. Because every search supposes, I will find it later, not now. In the next moment, that somehow by some gimmick, by some exercise, by some process of transformation, I will later discover what I want. This is postponement. Yes.
I cannot agree with you. What part of you can agree to see?
Yes.
Because I feel that it's much more profound than that. And that if you do have a, if you do seek meaning, it doesn't take away from life, it gives to life. And it gives it much more meaningful and profound, a profound thing. That's all I can think about.
Well, this is a matter of words, my friend, because you may think that dancing is superficial, whereas I think it's profound.
Yes.
And so on. And I suggested two meanings of the word meaning, one of which is merely reduces life to being symbolic of something else, something always beyond. Then I'm going to ask, what's the meaning of that? And then we get into that infinite regression of questions. I feel that instead of getting into these infinite regressions of what is beneath, what is behind, look, it's right out in front of you now. And when you catch on to that, now gets very profound. I mean, it's the moment when nothing becomes something. And I don't see how much profounder than that you can get. Yes.
But isn't hide and seek sort of the essential game and seeking fun in itself, even if you never find it?
Oh, yes, I'm telling you, that's I agree with. Seeking can be fun, but it won't get you to what you're looking for. You see, it's a way, seeking is a way of postponing finding. Let's put it off. You see, children on a hot day, they're terribly thirsty. And they say, let's get an ice cream soda. Another kid says, no, let's get thirstier. So when we finally get the ice cream soda, it'll be a real song. This is the principle of postponement. And everybody who is questing, who's practicing yoga and Zen meditation, all that kind of thing, is putting off that ice cream soda.
Well, but if that's the case, what do you propose?
What do I propose? Nothing.
then you will say nothing is something, and then we'll go around it again.
But if you really believe that, then there would be no echelon society. After all, we all are, either whether it's doing something or thinking something, we definitely are not just feeling that we're going to sit and let everything happen to us. Why did I come here? Or why did anyone come here today?
Yeah, but I mean, look here. When you ask always, why did you come? I repeat, that is a barren question. Why did you do it? Why did this happen? It goes a question that peters out. So this is not important. What is important, surely, is this immediate now? Not why are we here, but what are we here? Unless you live in the eternal now, consciously, you have no use for plans. Because people who live in the future, or for the future, when their plans come off, they're not there enjoying them. They're planning for another future. They never catch up with themselves.
Your future in the now.
Yes, in that sense. Of course. When you make plans, you plan now. And that can be a gas, making plans. But for goodness sake, do it in the now spirit, rather than, as it were, oh, if I can't wait till that happens. Because then if you're in an I can't wait spirit, you just bolt life, like somebody swallowing food so fast they can neither taste nor digest it. Yes.
Aren't there really two different ways you can search for something? The second one almost isn't a search. There's the way of intellectually trying to figure it out and plan it, and there's the way of experiencing it. And part of your experience would be taking in what would happen in the future. And that second way isn't a bad search. It's just really being.
Yeah.
So isn't there a type? That's the type of searching for meaning that would be okay, that would be fulfilling.
Well, yes. There is the searching in a spirit that the search is more fun than the finding. You know that? When you're traveling, for example, going somewhere is the real joy of it often. And that's the fallacy of the jet plane, that it abolishes distances between places, and all places which have a distance abolished between them become the same place. So there's no point going to Tokyo if it's already Los Angeles. I mean, this is the thing. Yes, there's a hand here.
Is it possible that in the word think that we are trapped in a Western word, that it seems as though you're projecting it as going down a road, as though we were going out to look for something?
Well, the comment is about seeking. Is it necessarily a road, like taking a road, or is seeking also conceivable as readiness to receive? Well, of course, the road isn't a merely Western analog. It's a very common metaphor. The path and the stages of the path, the steps of the path, are used in both East and West. But the Chinese word for the way is Tao, T-A-O. And the path is what we're looking for. In the Chinese sense, you see. The Tao is the works, baby. That is the which than which there is no witcher. And the to be in harmony with the way, to be on the way, you see. But the Tao isn't going anywhere. And that's like when the Chinese poet is wandering in the forest. And he looks at the clouds and he says, where are they going? No one knows. Where does this path lead? No one cares. I'm wandering on and on in a great forest without thought of return. That is poetic feeling to the Far East, both to the Japanese and the Chinese. They call that spirit Yugen. And it's the mysterious going nowhereness of things, the wandering spirit. So that sort of seeking is different from anxiety to get something in the future which you don't have now. Yes, sir.
What's the difference between just existing in now and experiencing everything, and not seeking anything, and pure hedonism?
Well, pure hedonism is a quest for pleasure. The hedonist, in that sense of the word, would not live in the eternal now if he found it not altogether enjoyable. He would then read romances of the past or fantasies of the future to get away from now, because what he's looking for is pleasure. But when we look for pleasure, you see, we split ourselves. We divide ourselves from pleasure in seeking it. And in trying to get away from pain, we divide ourselves from pain, not realizing that that's what creates pain, is the division of experience. So that the wholeness of experience is broken and we are disintegrated. Yes?
Before you made the distinction between nothingness and something, that nothingness really was a category. Isn't that just an intellectual fallacy? There's no such thing as any categories if you're really living on an experience level.
That's true. Categories do not really exist in nature. Categories are like taking a network printed on cellophane and putting it over a picture of a forest and then numbering the trees according to what squares they're in on the cellophane. That's categorization.
If you believe that, then that category of nothingness really is empty, because there's no such thing as that category out there.
Oh, I said it was thoroughly empty.
Would you?
But wait a minute, it isn't. It is a category in the sense that something is its limit. So it has an edge. And that's what you see in the Yangian diagram.
Would you comment on China and the recent developments?
No. I don't want to comment on China at the moment.
Would you repeat that about pain, what you just said?
Yes. What I was trying to say about pain is this. We are in a split relationship with the contents of our experience. The knower and the known. Then there is the knower is opposed with a known called pleasure and tries to identify with it. The knower is confronted with a known called pain and tries to be disentangled from it. But it is this very split. It is trying to get away from pain that makes pain painful. It's as if you got caught in some brambles and you pulled away from them, and they just dug more deeply into your skin. You would have to go the other direction to let the brambles out. You'd have to go into the bush.
Into the thing.
Yeah.
Ride the thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's only a metaphor. But the point is that as we keep up this distinction of the knower from the known, we're always running away and wanting to change experience. And there's a fundamental, therefore, escape. In every project to transform consciousness, there is an escape from what is. And when you realize you cannot get away from what is, not should you, not might you, but you can't, then at that point, when you realize you can't get away from what is, there's nothing left to you but to watch it. And then for the first time, you're taking a good look at your real self. Because your real self is happening. The Chinese call it Ziran, nature, what is so of itself. And that's you. And you is this happening. And it's everything that you're aware of is your happening, and a good deal more besides. You're not aware of all of yourself. Like you don't have an immediate vision of the contents of your stomach. You haven't got eyes down there. Yes, sir?
What is your criterion for heaven now or hell now? Are you juxtaposing with beauty as opposed to ugliness?
Yes. At least, you see, I know when I'm confronted with the beautiful, or when I pass into the beautiful, as I know when I pass into the ugly. When I try to say what these are or what my criteria are, all I'm doing is I'm trying to find a form of words that will apply to all my different sensations of beauty or of ugliness. The problem is not to know what is beautiful, but to know how to put it into linear language. That's where the complexity comes in. We very well know what is beautiful. But when we come to talk about it, the words disappear. I mean, here's our fundamental problem, because you see, in a certain way, what we mean by sense is God. Now, it isn't not that God doesn't have a sense of nonsense. Look at giraffes, for heaven's sakes. But it's this old thing. One form is, could God make a stone so heavy that he couldn't lift it? That is an equivalent question to say, could God make a dead body into a living body? That is the same question as asking, could a dead body be a living body? And that is the same question as asking, could the head be the feet?
God, earlier though, you did say that everybody alive had been dead before.
Yes, that's a different matter.
I'd like to enlarge on that a little bit, so I can understand.
Now look, one of the most interesting meditations is to think about death and imagine what it would be like to go unconscious and never become conscious again. That is, as Keats said of the Grecian urn, it teases you out of thought. And while you think of that, and say, good heavens, fancy never coming to again, you get a mirror image thought, which is about your birth. My goodness, you came to without ever having gone unconscious. Now, that's pretty weird. And it seems to me that if that happened once, it can happen again. Now what happens is this. When you die, boing, there's a blank. And the next thing you know is, wah! Just as you did it before. Because every I that comes into this world is I. It's me. It's you. On this level, it is diversified. But yet I is always central. Everyone feels he's the center of the universe. And on the surface of a sphere, any point may be the center of the surface. So, here it is. Every time it happens, it's me. So I should worry about reincarnation. Yes?
According to the Sufi doctrine, if you reach the third level, you're supposed to have the choice. You don't have to be reincarnated. Do you feel that? Is that so, God?
All wise action is never the result of choice.
Say again.
Wise action is never the result of choice.
Implies logic.
Huh?
Does choice imply logic?
Choice implies ignorance, indecision. When you know what to do, you don't choose, you do it.
What question could we ask you about love?
What?
What question could we ask you about love?
What question could you ask about love? What is love? Love is not a what. Love is the energy of the world. And nobody can say what that is. If anybody were to say what God is or what the energy of the world is, he would be talking nonsense. Now, there are times when it is important to talk nonsense. Because we can discover the energy of the universe through nonsense. When you say you take a sound that really doesn't mean anything much, like om, that's the energy of the universe going. Dig it. See, as you listen to sound, that's why music is a marvelous support for meditation. Digging sound, listening, just listening to that hum. There goes the energy of the universe. See? What is it? That's what it is. See?
Yeah. But would you say that we've
meditate for the sake of the meditation?
Yes.
In other words, not because if I meditate at some future date, something may or may not happen.
Yeah, that's right. Then if you do that, it isn't meditation.
Right.
Meditation is centered in the here and now. Done for some other reason, it isn't meditation. It stops dead right there.
What is Satori?
What is Satori? Satori is any kind of aha, eureka phenomenon, only specifically applied to discovering who and what you are.
The clear light
is that. You say, I saw the light. It doesn't necessarily mean that there was the physical hallucination of a flash. It may mean suddenly everything becomes transparent. That may be a way of feeling it. I mean, it's just as the problem vanishes and you stop asking the question.
Can you risk being God outside of this situation?
What do you mean, risk it? The thing, the problem is no risk being God. The risk is being human.